good day to be indigenous. Get up,
stand up. They are going to become more brutal.
Courtney Cup, Hidney Cup gave him.
Because all the hippies were trying to be Indians anyway.
They're going to become more repressive because it's a matter of dollars and their illusionary concepts of power.
Hey, Victor.
We must live in balance with the earth.
And also with recent happenings at Wounded Knee.
I am awake.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Wakanjahade. That means distant thunder, Wendy. Mm-hmm. And my colonized name, my taxpayer name, is Robert Pilot. And we discuss national and Twin City Native American news and events and Wisconsin. You know, we're live there on Devil Radio in Wisconsin, Wendy. And as we all know, Native issues are human issues, and human issues are Native issues.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Twin Cities American Indian COVID-19 Hotline. Call them at 651-304-9986. They're open Monday through Friday from 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. with your COVID-19 questions.
Yeah, it's awesome. Hey, I guess Trump was supposed to be, materialize as president today, so that didn't happen. And so I guess we're safe for another day.
You're funny. We went to Menards to buy like a lot of stuff that we just need, you know, for the month. And the guy goes, "Hey, you're stocking up, aren't you? You're stocking up." So Robert said, "Yeah, we needed to stock up because we were afraid that Trump might have been president again."
Yeah. So. Well, I was in Stillwater today too, taking care of some business, and then also had lunch there. And I guess Stillwater, for people that don't know, in Wisconsin or listening to us, is on the border of Wisconsin and Minnesota, and it supposedly is Minnesota's birthplace, but we all, the Lakotas know better than that, and all other natives, but it looks like there's no COVID in Stillwater. Yeah, I was the only one running around with a mask, and I was like, wow. You know, so, but hey, that's all the news I'm going to do, and Ogama's not here, but we have Lewis. Mm-hmm. And Lewis Eagle Thunder, who's what did you call yourself earlier, Lewis? A correspondent?
Contributor.
A contributor, yes, yes. Yeah. And he's doing the news today, so take it away, Lewis.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hope you bought some pillows at Menards, you know, because, you know, we all know the guy selling them is not doing that good today. But we have some great news. We got some great news on the census report. Robert and Wendy, we have the American Indian Alaska Native American population alone and in combination increased from 5.2 million in 2010 to 9.7 million in 2021. That's an 86.5% increase. I don't know who's having those babies, Robert, but someone is.
Well, I think it's more of we're getting out there and being counted, and we're still here. You know, I think we talked to a lot of our aunties and people that don't want the government to know where they are and who they are. But I think, especially with this election year and everything going on, Lewis and Wendy, I think people came out, registered to vote. Natives came out and registered to vote in record numbers, and also were counted.
Mm-hmm. Didn't Robert Lilligren, he was on yesterday, and I think he mentioned something like the white population is the lowest number that they've seen in years.
Yeah, so, I said that too a couple days earlier.
Really? Okay. Yeah. That's unusual.
Copyright Robert Pilot on that one. but yeah, we. But NCAI President Fawn Sharp mentioned that we are all excited that the official redistricting season can now begin with today's release of redistricting data. And again, Wendy, we talked a little bit about Robert Lilligren. He talked about redistricting kind of in length. And this really means a lot for us as indigenous people being represented. So I think this number is a great thing for all of us in Indian country, as well as being properly represented, as well as if you're non-Indian, to be counted as well. So moving on a little bit more with the news here, I'm going to try to move a little bit fast to try to get everything going. But in the Yukon to BC, a group actually finished their walk. They ran, they didn't run. I guess they walked a 6-week, 2,000 kilometer. And I did the math on that. That's around 1,200 mile walk to honor children and survivors of residential schools that began in Yukon, ended Monday in Kamloops, BC. Quote, ground zero for where the truth broke out, says the man behind the Warrior Walk for Healing Nations. When Jamie Henyu heard about the discovery of what they believed to be the remains of more than 200 children on the grounds of the former Kamloops Indian Residential School in May, he wondered how he could honor them and survivors in the state-sponsored institutions. Quote, that was our goal when we started out. It was that we walk and honor all the kids that have been found, all these kids that have been found and all the survivors out there, says Henyu. Interview with the community of Bonaparte. When a group of about 17 walkers was taking a break before they continued to Kamloops, Henry said originally that he thought that the walk would be alone, starting from Telegraph Creek to the northwest corner of BC. But support from the Northern Nations Alliance led the walk fundraising effort and started in Whitehorse in late June instead, a welcome event hosted by the Tecumloops Sequakpemec Nation took place Monday in Kamloops, their final stop, where a sea of people wearing orange shirts were gathered. So we're wonderful to see this outpouring of support when it comes to this residential school situation, especially in Kamloops. Another piece of news here. Blessing ceremonies held for new home of National Center for Truth and Reconciliation in Canada. The National Center for Truth and Reconciliation, NCTR, will soon have a new home in Winnipeg, Manitoba. Thursday morning saw survivors, elders, and dignitaries blessing the land where the new center will sit on the campus of the University of Manitoba in Winnipeg, home of the Manitoba Blue Bombers. For many in attendance, it was an emotional day. It means that we're able to start on this road on the way that we need it to be done. No political interference. And, you know, people trying to say you don't know that they need that. We've gone through that long time, and finally we're going to be an Indigenous-led group. It's going to be the way that we see things that we need to get done, said residential school survivor Juan Bidi Wakita. Another survivor, Eugene Ekin, said that he doesn't think that this day would have happened without the discovery of Kamloops. Quote, I want to acknowledge the 215 children that were found in Kamloops. I really honestly didn't feel that we would be sitting here today if it wasn't for those children being found. Truth and Reconciliation Commission, of course, was created in 2008 in Canada. And just for our listeners here in the United States, we still don't have a Truth and Reconciliation Commission in the United States when it comes to boarding school and genocide atrocities, something that we definitely need to take up with our representation here in our governmental systems. In other news, local to Minnesota, Minnesota DNR has received more complaints about domestic well problems so far this year than several other years combined. There's a lot of factors there, Robert, when it comes to the well issues that we have. So we'll continue to keep an eye on that. For any Indigenous activists out there, the Indian Collective, based in Rapid City, South Dakota, is proud to announce an open application process for new community self-determination grant available to tribal nations, First Nations, Indigenous-led organizations, as well as defense, development, decolonization of Indigenous people and the planet. Grants up to $100,000 will commence up to 2 years. So definitely keep an eye out for that. IndianCollective.org is a place to go for those type of loans if you are an Indigenous person looking to start a new program. The first annual Justice Walk for MMIW, it's a 5K walk run, will take place at the Great Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe powwow grounds. Open to everyone. Registration is open from 7 p.m. Race starts at 8:15 p.m. and that's not on Indian time. You can reach out to Tim Taggart at 320-339-6199 for more information. Again, that's the Mille Lacs Band of Ojibwe powwow grounds. That's a 5K run on I believe it is, if I didn't mention, it was it's coming up here shortly. So a little bit of news there, Robert, and I hope we were able to get it out as much as possible.
Wow, you did a great job. We're going to have Ogama back next week after she comes back. She's in a powwow, family powwow in, I believe, South Dakota. It's one of those Dakotas, Lakota Dakotas. But hey, it's Friday. It's a positive Friday, and we also have State Senator Mary Kunish, so we can dig deeper into what you were talking about today, Lewis, with a little about the census, redistricting, and all those fun things that go with us. And there's more Indians than ever, so that's a... Since we've been counted. So we'll be right back. You're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake.
Stay with us. Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
We are your relatives.
We are your relations.
Brothers.
Sisters.
Sons.
Daughters.
And some of us are your grandchildren.
We are your community. Historically, we held places of honor and respect. Because of the impact of colonization, some of us are rejected, thrown out from family, friends, and community, set up as targets for sexual violence, sex trafficked, humiliated, tortured, and murdered. Everybody has the right to be safe. We are your relatives. Remember,
homophobia is not traditional.
Sponsored by the Minnesota Indian Women's Sexual Assault Coalition.
Life is a journey, and the Doherty Family College will help you get where you want to go. Located downtown Minneapolis, this affordable two-year college provides free textbooks, a laptop, meals, career coaches, one-on-one mentorship, and a Metro Transit pass, making DFC the perfect pathway to a bachelor's degree. Turn your dreams into reality. Connect with a counselor today at dfc.stthomas.edu.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
This is Winona the Duke of Honor the Earth, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio. I'm awake.
We are the Alusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and I'm Wakanjahare.
This portion of the show is brought to you by the Minnesota Indian Women Sexual Assault Coalition.
Hey, it's awesome Friday here at Native Roots Radio, and we have State Senator Mary Kunish, who we just love to have on. A lot of discussion, a lot of fun stuff, but also a lot of great work that the cat's attacking me. The cat wants me to pet her.
Yeah, she's
Wendy,
relentless.
You might have to take over the show.
We could not let her out of the room because she would meow so loud outside the door. So we have to let her in, and she's actually sitting right next to Robert on a chair, very close to him, and she will not allow him to stop petting her. Like, he does not have a choice. He has to keep petting her.
I know, and I'm not left-handed. I'm ambidextrous, but this is getting a little... I'm old. My shoulder hurts. Hey, Positive Friday, and we're here with State Senator Mary Kunish. Welcome, Mary. Here, I'll unmute you because I secretly muted you.
There I am. I'm unmuted. Good afternoon, good evening, everyone. It's really good to see you again.
Yeah, it's good to see you. Welcome back to Minnesota. I know you were out of town for a while with the family. That's always a double-edged sword. I know you were going there for, with your relative that had passed. But we're glad to have you here. There's so much going on, and Lewis brought up earlier in the show, and we talked to Robert Lilligren, or I should say Wendy and Lewis talked to Robert Lilligren yesterday about... You know, your deal, redistricting, there's 86.5% more Native Americans counted this time than last time. Right, exactly. And
I mean, it almost doubled. The count almost, it doubled. Yeah.
Yeah. And I think, too, a lot of it had to do with the election year and people just realizing that they got you know, come out from hiding and register to vote and be counted. And I know every 10 years we have these big, big pushes to count people in Indian country. And I think this year it really helped.
Oh, absolutely. I think that you know, there were so many groups and so many individuals that worked really hard on intentionally getting people out to vote, because I think here in Minnesota, we have proven that representation matters, and that when we have the decision makers and policy makers at the table, things can get done. And we've been doing that in the state legislature, you know, for the last 4 or 5 years. But when it comes to the census, you know, that was you know, an unknown to a lot of people. Also, a lot of our Native folks did not know that they could participate in general elections. They thought they were limited to their tribal elections. But the census was, we really had to educate folks, and we really had to encourage them to participate in that. I mean, it's people come to your door, you know, around here, they come to your door. This year they did a lot of the mail-in stuff. But what most people did not know is that there are dollars connected to your participation in the census. Every person gets X amount of dollars from the federal government that goes to your county, to your state, to your, you know, municipality based on population. And for our Native folks, because of course they've been fearful of participating, they didn't want the federal government to know where they were, they didn't want to know they had kids because they were afraid they were going to come and take their kids. Right. All of that historic disconnect from our basic national census. But what they didn't realize is that not only do those dollars that everybody else gets comes to their communities, but also the federal government has funding that goes to our Native communities based on our treaties and agreements. Mm-hmm. And those are things that went to our public health, went to our Indian education, went to all sorts of different things that we weren't being counted for. So we were being pulled up short, you know? And mm-hmm. when you think about when they were distributing all those CARES dollars to the reservations, there was not an adequate count of what the population was on those reservations, partly because there were, you know, that government or that administration was kind of picking and choosing where they were pulling the information from, if you remember who that was.
Mary,
but also,
remember too, we were doing a bunch of symposiums and things that for the census, and the final day kept on changing. Remember that 45? That was like scary because he was cutting it off early. And do you remember that?
You know what? Now that you bring that up, I do remember that he was just going to like, okay, we're done, closing shop here. And there were still, you know, 10 days left of the original census, and he was going to end it. And I don't know if, you know, you like to think that, you know, they noticed that there were certain groups of people participating at higher rates than ever before. And so he just cut it off, but they weren't able to do that. So I'm really, really happy for that.
Yeah, it was kind of a weird, weird time too. And today, again, we talked about in the beginning of the show that this was the day Trump was supposed to end up back in the White House, and it didn't happen. And I guess, well, there's still a few more hours for that to happen. Jeez.
I'm not going to hold my breath.
right. Exactly. So now we get into redistricting, now that we know what the census is talking about, and this is your jam, this is your go-to thing. Tell us a little bit about it again, and for our audience that are just jumping on and hearing this show for the first time.
Sure. So I am on the redistricting committee for our DFL caucus. And for those of you that are listening from a distance, DFL is what we call our Democrats here in Minnesota, Democratic Farmer Labor Caucus. So we're the DFL, we're the Dems. And the Senate had the very first redistricting meeting this week up in Bemidji, and both the GOP and the Dems were there. And then we opened it up for community conversations or comments and testimony, which was really nice. We had we had quite a few Native folks that came out to remind the folks, the legislature, how important it is to keep the reservations, the tribes into one district and not split them up. Also made a point of recognizing that the polling places that our reservations have access to are often far distance and very inconvenient to travel to. And so we're going to work on seeing if we can't get either additional polling spots or have them more convenient. And luckily, Minnesota did not lose any of their federal congresspersons or legislators. We were very, very close. I was trying to think, there was an article that I read that actually gave like the specific number that that New York had less than us, and it wasn't very much.
87.
Was it 87? Yeah. Yeah. So if, 87, that's, voting counts, you guys, mm-hmm. your ballot counted and, or your census counted for that. So we were able to keep that. And now we're looking at the census to see where we will have to make those adjustments within our districts. Most of the consensus is that the urban areas, the rural areas, especially the rural greater Minnesota, have shrunk in population. And that means those districts will become a little bit bigger, and that our urban core, our like Twin Cities, Minneapolis, St. Paul, and maybe those first ring suburbs have grown. And so we'll have to grow those areas as well. But we, the bottom line is we want to make sure that we have good representation for all of our districts. I mean, I, as a Dem, I'm not on that committee. I'm not out there trying to gerrymander and try to figure out how we can, get all the best, the biggest amount of Dems in each district, because I feel like it does help to have a variety of folks running and a combination across our state. And so we'll be working on this more and more. Hopefully we'll have more committee hearings, but we have to finally come up with a map by the middle of February.
Wow.
Most people again say it's probably really hard to get the Dems and the GOP to come up with a map that we can both agree on, which is what we're supposed to do by state constitution. And mm-hmm. when that doesn't happen, it goes to the federal government. To the courts here in Minnesota. Right. And the courts are the ones that will decide that. And so it'll be probably a court decision based on the information that they receive.
Hey, do you have time for another segment, Mary? I got a couple questions to ask you if you have time. That's awesome. We're with State Senator Mary Kunish, and it's Fun Facts Friday. I want to find out when we come back, Wendy, how do they figure out the borders? And, and it's a numbers game, so they're figuring it out through the census. I get that. But how do they figure out the borders? So we're going to find out from State Senator Mary Kunish about that, because I really don't know. Do you? Mm-hmm.
No, I don't know.
Yeah, so it's pretty interesting. It's more, our show is educational today.
Absolutely. I learn something every day.
Right on. Hey, you're listening to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and we'll be right back with State Senator Mary Kunish.
Stay with us.
Minnesota has the only original wolf population in the continental United States, and 80% of Minnesotans believe the wolf should be protected. Howling for Wolves is asking Minnesotans to respect our true wildlife manager, the wolf. Their survival is critical to our ecosystems, our communities, and even our economy. As highly intelligent animals with strong social bonds, Minnesota wolves deserve to be protected and admired. Learn more at howlingforwolves.org. Let's live and let howl.
Hi, Minneapolis. This is Randy Rhodes. Listen to me. Weeknights, 10 to midnight, AM 950, the progressive voice of Minnesota.
Hi, I'm Alicia Luther-Toms, certified financial planner with RBC Wealth Management. You might think you have to give up performance to invest responsibly, but that simply isn't true. Responsible investing can actually have a positive impact on performance. We will work with you to come up with a strategy that matches your values. This is Alicia Luther-Toms at 612-770-4460 or alicia.luther.toms@rbc.com.
RBC Wealth Management, a division of RBC Capital Markets, LLC, member NYSE, FINRA, SIPC.
Hey, Wendy, what are we doing for dinner after the show?
How about we go to J. Selby's on 169 Victoria Street in St. Paul? They have a delicious plant-based menu that's compassionate and environmentally sustainable.
I'm getting their spot-on vegan Big Mac, the dirty secret.
You can pick up and they deliver within a five-mile radius, or you can call them at 651-222-3263 or visit jselbys.com.
Well, you sold me one. Let's go order at J. Selby's tonight.
I'm hungry.
Hi, everyone. Matt McNeil here. The last year was hard for so many of us, and many small businesses struggled. That's why everyone at AM 950 is so grateful to the listeners who stepped up and helped support the radio station by becoming members of the station. Because of your listener support, we were able to continue to deliver the best and only progressive talk in the state on one of the few true progressive talk radio stations in the country. As we move into a better tomorrow, it's still important to help support small businesses like AM 950, and the membership is a great way to do it. We have memberships at any financial level, either a one-time donation or a recurring one, and we appreciate any support. We've already featured a lot of members-only bonus content, like the calendars, special member-only interviews, and even personalized messages, and we have more benefits coming soon. To become a member, go to am950radio.com, click on the Become a Member button, and sign up today. That's am950radio.com. Help support AM950 sponsors, support local small businesses, and become a member of AM950 Radio today at am950radio.com.
Hi, this is Brian, the owner of AirSeal Tech. I wanted to say thank you to all the AM950 listeners who have had us help them solve their home performance issues. And for the listeners that are still struggling with being hot or cold, with poor indoor air quality, asthma or allergy symptoms, high indoor humidity, or extremely high energy bills, we can help. AirSeal Tech's mission is very simple. That's to be the very best insulation contractor in the state of Minnesota. We live up to this goal with the use of state-of-the-art equipment and can show you proof of the things that are causing your comfort issues. If you're not testing, you're just guessing. Proof is possible. Do not trust your family's comfort, health, and safety to a guess. Many of Minnesota's largest builders, remodelers, HVAC contractors, and property managers rely on the high-quality service provided by AirSeal Tech, Minnesota's only BPI-certified Gold Star contractor. For a free, honest, and accurate assessment of any comfort issue and a no-pressure estimate from the best, give AirSeal Tech a call at 612-888-3664.
With your AM 950 weather, I'm Patrick Lilia. Clear skies overnight with a low of 56, then on Saturday, sunny skies warming back up to 85. Summer is winding down, so make sure to get those summer stains cleaned out with help from our friends at Zero Res. Make your appointment today by calling 952-0-RES or go to ZeroResMinnesota.com.
Hi, I'm Jane Fonda, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents I'm Awake, and that was Jane Fonda.
This portion of the show is brought to you by MN350, a grassroots organization fighting for climate justice.
Mary, I know we got other things we want to talk about, but I really think I have to just finish this off real quick about. Sure. So do you guys go by the last boundaries and then stretch them out or shrink them, or how does that work? I mean, I don't even know.
Mm-hmm. So we have 8 districts here in Minnesota, and within each of those districts, they consist of 713,719 individuals. That's how many people can be in each district. So it has to be divided by 8. And what we do as legislators, we put together a piece of legislation that is called our principles. And those are like our guidelines or our outline. And we rank how important different aspects of these maps need to be. So we want to make them, first of all, we want to make them numbered all in a consecutive order, not like 1, 4, 5, 8, you know, all over the place. And then we want to make sure that none of the districts are divided into, none of the House districts are divided into a Senate district. We want to make sure that none of the districts are, or the lines are drawn to favor one party over the other, making sure that we have population equality. We want to make sure that each district is composed of convenient, contiguous territory structure. So we always, and in Minnesota, that's sometimes kind of hard because we have all these lakes and rivers and streams that we don't want those to cut off or make it hard for people to participate. And then we also, our DFL party included making sure that we keep whole all of our Indian reservations. We want to preserve some unique political subdivisions, like counties and cities, townships, that they're not divided. And we heard a couple of stories about that up north this weekend or this week. And then, you know, some districts are very, have large populations of people of color. We want to make sure that's not separated, and a couple of those things. So we don't actually, you know, most of this is done these days through software. You know, you put it in, there's a formula, the line is drawn, and then we have to review it and make sure that none of those, you know, unique situations are divided. And I use this example. 10 years ago, I was able to participate as a community member, and we went in one evening, a couple evenings, and they just laid out all these maps and examples of where lines had been drawn. And right away, I recognized that there was a line that was had been drawn right between our Little Earth urban community on Lake Street, so that on one side were the all of the housing, and then of course on the other side of the street is the community center, and that's where folks go to vote. And they had put the line right between it, not realizing and not knowing that neighborhood at all. And so those are the kind of things that we will look for very closely.
Wow.
But it's a software thing, and we can adjust it as needed. But I think they do want to keep them as, you know, draw the lines least with the least amount of change possible, so that people are very comfortable in their areas and their districts. But it'll be interesting.
Wow. And well, we'll have an expert like yourself on to explain it once this does go down. So what else have you done this week? I know I saw pictures of you up there in the deep north, right up there. Who else did you run into up there?
Oh, well, Winona LaDue came and visited us. Lenny Finday, who is the lawyer for one of the tribes up there. We had a couple of Native folks as well as non-Native folks that were there to talk with us. But one other interesting thing that I got to do this week, I saw Lenny Finday up there, and he said, would you like to come to a meeting and talk about Line 3 with the Acting Assistant Secretary Jamie Pinkham and Deputy Treasurer Tommy Boudreau?
Whoa.
Yes. And I said, of course I do.
Yeah.
And so the very next day, or within a day or two, we met down here in the Twin Cities to talk about the things that have been going on up on Line 3, the civil rights violations when they fire on these folks that are just standing on public lands. That's not great. Right. We want to make sure that again, to assert the wild rights of our tribes and protection of those. And of course the civil right for the tribes to review and monitor those areas that are on treaty land. And so we were able to share quite a bit of information that they didn't know. And, you know, the word has gotten out that there have been these fracking incidences, breakthrough fracking incidents. And the MPCA was calling them something else that was really like a really benign word, you know, just sort of an oops incident or something like that. But what we were able to, we legislators wrote them a letter and said, we want to know all this information. We want to know where this happened, when this happened, who's right. supposed to be monitoring it, what does the cleanup look like, all, you know, where is this violating the permits, all of those things. And they kind of dragged their feet until we really put a fire underneath them. At that time, we were told there were 9. When we met with the MPCA, there were 12 of these frack outs. And the next morning, they made public some other information. There were 28 of these frack outs. And that's where, when they're doing the horizontal drilling, some of that product and the chemicals that they're using in the air breaks through up into, you know, through the sediment in the lake bed or the waterbed, up into the general water. So it's releasing what they're saying are non-toxic pollutants, but nonetheless releasing foreign chemicals into those bodies of water.
They won't tell us what's in those chemicals either.
Bentonite. And I would have to go back and get the exact, I'm kind of looking for my notes to see if I even brought those here with me, but where is it? Anyways, it's they say it's a non-toxic chemical, but you know, as I said, it's still a foreign chemical to those areas. But what was really interesting is this guy named Ron Turney, T-U-R-N-E-Y, and he is with the Indigenous Environmental Group, and he put together this incredible report around, he has a bunch of, what are those called, those things that fly around?
Drones. I was going to say flow charts.
Yeah, he's got drones, and he's got all kind of footage. And what he did is he took the list, the chart of all the frack outs that the MPCA reported, and put it against the information he's been able to collect through the drones, and realized that there were plenty of them that have not been reported even. So there's more and more of these happening than Enbridge is reporting, or that the MPCA is listing on those forms. And so they got an earful. Tara Huska was there again, Winona LaDuke was there. We had leaders from Mille Lacs and Red Lake and White Earth to share their dismay and disgust with the whole situation. And they listened, and I'm hoping that something will come of this.
Well, you know, it's going to be history, and we're going to be able to hold people accountable, especially in 400 or 500 days. We have another election too, and we aren't happy, and it's very sad because, you know, Mary, we talk about this every day because something new happens on Line 3 in Ogama, and Lewis talk about it, our guests talk about it, and it's just maddening.
So let's just say, give them the benefit of the doubt, and you're saying that these chemicals are non-toxic going into the water. It's still chemicals going into pristine water that's used for rice paddies, that's used, you know, it's the aquifer, it's the water that goes down the Mississippi River. Whether it's toxic or not, it's still chemicals, and it's still going to affect the ecosystem in a way that we don't know and we don't understand, because it hasn't, you know, those chemicals have not touched that area there yet. So it's just going to be a mess. Whether it's toxic or not is not even should not even be an issue.
Right.
That is true, because every time that happens, that is a violation of the permit. Mm-hmm. So in the letter that we sent to the MPCA, we requested that they revoke the permit and they pause any activity. The other thing that Ron found out was that when he looked at the reported frack outs. They were done during that time. Some of them happened during that time that Enbridge was supposed to be on a pause.
Right.
And so they continued to do that work. I found the spreadsheet of the incidences. I mean, some of these incidences were 6,000 to 9,000 gallons of barricade bentonite that was spilled into the area. And it's not just in the water, it's in the fragile areas around those places, like on the ground or in the that ecosystem. And one of the things that Ron's drones showed too was Enbridge guys trying to clean it up and just basically throwing sandbags in there to soak it up, you know, really subpar action to even try to correct the spillages. So it's pretty fascinating stuff. And I don't know, Robert, I can probably send you his report that has that active information on there that you can post if you'd like.
We'd love to. Thank you so much. And thank you, Pini Gigi, for all you do. Here's just another example. State Senator Mary Kunish looking out for other Indigenous people in this country, in this state. Thank you again. We'll be right back after this short break with Wendy, and we're talking sacred animals.
We are. Stay with us.
In Minnesota, perinatal and postpartum mothers have legal protections to help keep them safe and healthy in the workplace. That means exclusions from heavy lifting, safe spots for breastfeeding, and more. The Women's Economic Security Act protects the rights of pregnant and postpartum women to work safely during pregnancy and to express breast milk at work. The Minnesota Department of Labor and Industry is here to help you and to protect your rights. Call 800-342-5354 or visit dli.mn.gov/newparents.
If you're hurting in your relationship or have been affected by sexual violence, you're not alone. Stronghearts Native Helpline can help you through these difficult and uncertain times. Stronghearts Helpline is a free 24/7 confidential domestic dating and sexual violence helpline for Native Americans. Help is available by calling 1-844-762-8483 or by clicking on the chat now icon on strongheartshelpline.org. This message is sponsored by the National Indigenous Women's Resource Center.
Hey, Cudahy, to all my friends and relatives in four directions. This is Robert Pilot of Native Roots Radio presents I'm Awake. I'm here to ask you for your support. Finding honest, Native-centered news is not easy. But with your support, we're able to provide accurate information about Standing Rock, Line 3, treaty violations, and COVID-19 in our Native communities. Please visit Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon and donate if you can. That's Native Roots Radio Network on Patreon. Pini Gigi, and thank you for your support.
Hey, Ogama, I've been hearing a lot about this term, climate justice. What is that?
Climate justice is recognizing that the negative impacts of climate change don't affect all people equally. It also means transitioning from a fossil fuel-based economy to a more sustainable future. MN350 is one of the groups that's pushing for this transition to protect our futures. You can even get involved, too.
That's great, especially since I'm concerned about pipeline projects like Line 3. How can I help MN350?
Just find them on Facebook or visit mn350.org.
Hi, this is Representative Sharice Davids from Kansas. I'm Ho-Chunk, and you're listening to Native Roots Radio.
We are a Lusa Nation.
Hey, welcome back to Native Roots Radio Presents. I'm Awake, and I'm your host, Robert Pilot.
And this portion of the show is brought to you by Howling for Wolves, protecting wolves for future generations.
I think that's the best call I've ever heard
you
do.
You should have heard us yesterday, Lewis and I. It was pretty lame because, you know, it was kind of like, you know, it was just the two of us, but we did the best we could.
Wow.
I agree.
Hey, I'm looking at the screen here too, and it is Friday the 13th. I'm not superstitious.
No, I'm not either.
Because I go by the Native American, the Indian calendar. And mm-hmm. It's like we don't care what day it is or what time it is. Oh. Hey, so that was awesome.
Yeah, Mary's great. She's great. She's wonderful.
Hey, and I want to, it's a fun Friday. And Wendy, let's talk a little bit. You talk about our sacred animals and I shouldn't even say sacred. I mean, there are beings, there are relatives, and we get heavy during the week. So it's really fun to on Fridays talk a little fun stuff. Mm-hmm. But looks like you have a serious look on your face, so I'm not sure how fun it's going to be. But
no problem. No, it's not a serious look on my face at all. My name is Hanaji Hihani. And that means cares for them. And I was given that name by my Dega Curtis. As always, Curtis, thank you for that name. And Curtis's Native American name is Mashke Hanajinga, which means walks on white clouds. So as always, thank you. I am a humane policy volunteer leader for the Humane Society of the United States. And I work on animal issues at the state and local level. And I'm always happy to do that and work on animal issues. But yeah, so Friday is Fun Friday. But yesterday, since I was kind of forced to host the show, and I was a little like nervous about it, I also had I had a gun to my head, and I had to host the show. No, but anyway, I had to do that, I kind of didn't want to have a heavy one yesterday either. So I had a fun Thursday too. So we'll have a fun Thursday and a fun Friday.
Yay.
But yes. Yesterday, I was talking about this dog who had puppies, and the mom died. So all these puppies didn't have a mom. So all these volunteers were there just, trying to take care of these puppies and feed them so they wouldn't die. But at the same time when that happened was another dog whose litter died. So they brought the puppies, the orphaned puppies, to the mom whose puppies just died, and they made like a really wonderful little family, and everything worked out just perfectly. So that's what I kind of talked about yesterday. So I'm still in the same mood about talking about how animals help other animals and things like that. So Robert's making fun of me. But anyway, this article I got, it's called, it's on the One Green Planet, and it has really awesome videos if you want to go online and look at it. It's called One Green Planet, and it's 9 times animals come to the rescue of their fellow animal friends. And this was just put out a week ago. So they're really fun to watch. And actually there's one word I wasn't even going to read this article because there's one word in this article that I cannot say. And we're going to see if I could say it or not. And let's see if everyone can guess which word it is.
All right.
Like humans, many animals have been observed displaying altruistic.
It's observed.
displaying altruistic behaviors. Altruism essentially means selfless concern for the well-being of others. Some animals put themselves in harm's way to help create a need, and they help other animals. So that's what I'm going to be talking today, how some animals help other animals. But here's a really cute thing. And if you go on and watch this video, it's the most cutest thing you've ever seen. So a piglet is helping comfort a cat who has seizures.
Oh.
So this little cat, a little black cat, has really bad seizures. And every time the cat has seizures and then doesn't feel good really afterwards, the piglet comes and comforts and cuddles with this little kitten, and it's really cute. So the little black cat is named Batman, and it's really very cute. And so you should go on and watch this little thing. But there's also another video of a geese that protect a piglet from being bullied by other pigs. So the mother pig had babies, and there was this one baby pig that was the runt of the litter, and nobody wanted to feed it, or the other pigs were pushing it out of the way. But this goose came over and started taking care of this taking care of this little piglet, and it was really very, very cute.
Wait, a goose was taking care of the piglet?
Yes.
Am I in a?
If you've ever felt like an odd one out in your friend group, then you probably sympathize with this piglet. It is. It's very cute. So I think that you should, and it, you know what? It's all different kinds of animals that take care of other animals, but the one that So if you're on our Facebook page, Lewis just put up the picture of the pig and the cat. So the cat is actually riding on the back of the pig. And they're friends. I mean, pigs and kitties could be friends. Why not? All right, let's see if you could find this one, Lewis. This is a story, and this is a true story, of a monkey that adopts a stray puppy. Stray puppies are hard for anyone to resist, and this monkey is no exception. The bear bonded on the streets of Road, India, when the monkey took the puppy into its care. The monkey displays various protective behaviors towards the small puppy. For example, he grooms him, defends him from other dogs, and even lets him eat first. The puppy is always being toted around by this caring monkey, and the two have been quite a spectacle in Road. So this, the even the village, yes, that's exactly the monkey and the puppy. And this monkey, the village people who live in the village of Road, India, believe that this monkey had a baby and the baby died. Aww. And then just kind of found this puppy and took the puppy over. And there's actual footage of the monkey holding the puppy in his arm, jumping from limb to limb, like flying through the air. So that got me a little nervous. I didn't want the monkey to drop the puppy. But the villagers are feeding them. And the
village people?
The village people are feeding them. And the monkey lets the little dog eat first, always. Lets the dog eat first. So we just, you know, everybody just thinks that...
I'm stunned.
They did it. In an orangutan saves a baby bird from drowning. So this orangutan that was in a zoo had a pond in its enclosure. And a baby bird fell in the water and was just flapping to get out. But the orangutan got a leaf, put it in the water so that the bird could kind of get leverage, right? And then they took the... They took the bird out of the pond. And but I love how One Green Planet says over and over again, when they have these really beautiful stories about animals in zoos and in cages, how inquisitive they all are and how they have a soul and they are beings, and that they should not be in cages.
Right.
And they should not be, looked at by the public. So, and then there was another one, a bear and the enclosure, a blackbird, like a crow, got into the water and was drowning. And the bear took the crow out of the water and just set him back a little roughly, I'd have to say. The bear was a little rough. Oh. Could have been a little bit more gentle, but you know.
Kind of like H.R. Puffin stuff.
But it was a bear. So anyway, the bear took the blackbird, a crow, out, and then...
Did what?
And just left the bird there and went eating its vegetables. So that's what it did.
Look, there's another picture.
That's it.
Chris has said that this is sacred animal news is quickly becoming his favorite segment. Awesome. Thank you, Chris,
Thank
for
you
listening.
So much. I appreciate it.
We need to resist, divest, join a group, run for office. We're still here. We are the seventh generation.
Free Leonard Peltier.